Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome into the Husker 24/7 podcast. I'm Michael Bruntz. That's Brian Christofferson. And it's Tuesday. It's almost the second National Signing Day, National Signing Day part deux. And we will we'll get that set up for you today. We also have a little bit to talk about with Terrence Knighton and Ed Foley yesterday. We got our next Noah's Ark press conference of new assistant coaches. They're coming up two by twos, and we're going to discuss them two by two. So Terrence Knighton, we got pot roast, and we got Ed Foley. I would watch a buddy cop show with Terrence Knighton and Ed Foley, just to put that out there.
Set in Philadelphia, probably.
It has to be. Or Jersey, I guess. You could do Jersey, too. Ed Foley was very specific about North Jersey and South Jersey. And, so we'll get into that in a minute here. Just as a reminder, if you don't already, find us on Spotify, on Google Play, on Apple. Subscribe to the podcast. It's free. It's magnificent. And we would appreciate you subscribing there. Also, the Husker 24/7 YouTube channel also available to subscribe to for free. So with that being said, what'd you learn from Pot Roast yesterday besides why he's called Pot Roast? Let's start with him.
Well, that was pretty interesting to begin with, how he got the Pot Roast name. Good thing he didn't pick the shrimp Alfredo. It came down to basically he ordered pot roast on a plane. And his joking teammate said, "You claim that like that's your name, pot roast." So that it became that. And here he is today before us. I guess I'm struck with him and all the other guys when they talk about, it seems like with the Matt Rhule staff, a lot of them sort of knew him back in Philadelphia when he was at Temple in some way or another. And there was sort of an immediate reaction to him that always comes out. Like in Terrence Knighton's case, I believe it was his sophomore year at Temple when Rhule showed up there as a D-line coach. And he talked about how like right away there was just this thing about him with like the urgency, like with there's an urgency about everything you do, you know, like I kind of take that as like a pride or competitiveness in everything you do, whether you're in the classroom or you're going out in the community, you're going to do it to the best of your abilities or if you're on the field. And just the way he spoke about that, I thought was pretty interesting. And then, you know, also I think that the line people are going to like is when he says, you know, when I was young, Nebraska was the Alabamas, the Georgias. That's what we're trying to get them to be. And then all these guys say this. They say that's what they deserve to be. And it's just talk in the off season, but that's all we can do right now is guys talk. We quote it and people get kind of excited. And I do think there's a staff of guys who very much appreciate the fabric of this program and like how it was great once and like the structure is seemingly kind of there to like make it really good again, at least. And they get to be a part of that. And there's like an excitement about like, there's something with history that people care a lot about that I can have my say in. And I think that comes out when guys talk.
Yeah, it's funny too. I mean, Terrence Knighton is a couple years younger than me. And it feels like we're kind of getting to that inflection point where pretty soon coaches aren't going to be able to say that, right? Like,
yeah.
So it still is noteworthy when they say it. It's good that they recognize that. I think it's like a warm cup of soup on a really blustery January day for Nebraska fans. I was kind of going back through his audio from yesterday, and it's been kind of fascinating to, I guess, listen to what the coaches think about the groups that they're inheriting. And with Terrence Knighton, you're going to be playing a kind of different, you know, defensive system than what you saw last year, than what a lot of these guys were recruited to. But my sense from listening to the defensive staff, and we've heard from Evan Cooper so far, we've heard from Tony White, we've heard from Terrence Knighton, there's still a lot that they've got to get figured out there. You know, he was kind of asked about, you know, what Tony White looks for, you know, what those kinds of, you know, what they've talked about. And, you know, I think people need to remember that these coaches haven't been around each other a ton, and especially the ones that aren't, you know, kind of that Temple tree, and Tony White's not. So I think that's going to be fascinating in February when these guys finally sit down in the same room together, start talking X's and O's and moving pieces around and seeing how guys move and that kind of stuff in workouts and figuring out how this is going to work. I mean, that's going to be interesting to me in the spring is, you know, Tony White's got to kind of teach his stuff to these coaches, and they've got to in turn teach that to the players. So there's a lot of work to be done there, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, as much as this is a very much a family staff for the most part that's been together, you do have that really key part of your DC is fairly fresh to everybody, you know. So I mean, that's a pretty big deal. And he runs a scheme that's maybe different than they knew a little bit. And you got to figure out your personnel too. We've heard so much about how, you know, Tony White's 3-3-5 is bendable, I guess, you know, to sort of what your roster makeup is, but you're still trying to figure out how much depth do we really have on the D-line. That's what they're saying, you know, how many really solid linebackers can we count on? I was just sort of looking at the D-line again today, Bruns, who's on the roster, and there's all sorts of fun guys coming in. There's not a lot coming back, and there's really not. I mean, Ty Robinson's back, and Stephon Wynn, but I think, yes, Hotmocker. And then I might be leaving someone out who played some meaningful snaps, but I think that's the main guys. And then, you know, I think the loss of Feist is going to be tough, actually. And the loss of, obviously, Nelson, whatever, he's an edge guy. But I understand that some of the edge defenders they brought in are going to fit into that piece of the puzzle with what they do up front on the defensive line. So you can't just separate the interior guys from them. But that is, if I were to say what's one of my big worry points right now about this team, it's still like the D line and like if they've got the dudes to actually hold up in this league, no matter how excited we are about all the other stuff that's going on.
Yeah. Terrence Knighton said yesterday, the thing that they kind of have to get figured out is in that 3-3-5, if you're bringing up somebody to make it a four-man front, they've got to figure out who that fourth guy is. Is it a defensive lineman? Is it an edge rusher? Is it more of a rover or a smaller linebacker? So, I mean, that's a big piece of kind of how the 3-3-5 is bendable within, you know, based on who you're playing. I mean, that's how Iowa State runs it differently than how Syracuse ran it or how San Diego State did, or I guess Mississippi State as well. So that's going to be, you know, combing through the personnel and figuring out what they have. What did you kind of make, I guess, of we've heard from a couple different assistants, and I think when you start hearing something multiple times, it becomes a little bit of a, okay, I need to file that one away. But he's talked a lot about the competitiveness of this coaching staff. It seems like that's kind of what Matt Rhule is trying to construct, is this staff of young, kind of hungry coaches. that are okay with competing with one another in whatever it might be.
Yeah, it definitely seems that way. I thought Knighton's had the line of the day where he said, you don't want to be the weak link, you know, and especially that's the advantage I do think of having some younger guys on staff is it doesn't matter if you're coaching football or it's in any career. When you're like in your, you know, late 20s to early 30s, in Garrett McGuire's case, I guess, early 20s, there's sort of that, I got to prove it, you know, like you just like, I got to put my feet in the ground and show that this is where I belong and I'm meant to do this. And I'm not saying those guys don't believe they're meant for it, but there is for some of them, it's sort of their first big full-time assistant's job. So no doubt there's going to be that like desire to like show everyone like I can handle all the different facets that go with being a college assistant coach, not just on the field stuff, but recruiting. That's where Knighton's been interesting because he really doesn't have a deep recruiting background. I mean, he coached 2 years at Wagner and then went to the Carolina Panthers for a couple of years. And yet you would have to say his first couple months on the job, he's made an impression with guys. I mean, he definitely is active, and especially in the Houston area, and is had some what's seemingly success. For a guy who's really very new to recruiting. And that I tried to ask him a question about that the other day, like, where did you pick, you know, cause some guys have like a mentor, somebody they pick stuff up from where they build to that point as a recruiter. In his case, I think it's just built from, he can talk about like his NFL career, you know, and all he knows from 8 years in the league. And, also just being around rules staff, like I think as a player in that part I mentioned earlier about the urgency and accountability that's within the program. And so he knows the basic tenets to preach about what a rural team is like. And that's probably useful in the living rooms for him, even though he's fairly new at it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think he's done a really nice job, and he's done it in a number of different places too. I mean, he's basically set up shop, it seems like, in Houston the last couple of weeks, you know, all around that area. You know, he was able to get Kai Wallen, out of Sacramento. I mean, he and Omar Hales were kind of the driving force early on and pulling Nebraska to the front of that race. So, yeah, I mean, I think he just kind of has that personality that you kind of naturally gravitate towards. And, oh, by the way, it doesn't hurt that he played a number of years in the NFL and was pretty darn productive while he was there too. We also heard from Ed Foley. We got almost a half hour of Ed Foley. Ed wanted to make sure we didn't have anywhere to be and just started talking Philly sports with us. And we can kind of get to that. Two things. I mean, the big thing of kind of his month has been the social media tour of Nebraska. I think he's been to more high schools than most people in the state have been to. And also, they're going to be aggressive on special teams. To hear that they're going to try to return punts and kicks, it's like mind blowing. Do you think they can get it done? Because I always go back to what Mike Riley said. Like, you know, that it's just in today's college football, it's just so hard to return punts unless you just have like a transcendent player back there.
Mm. The return conversation is always pretty interesting that way because Mike Riley was right. If you think about, if you actually go through every year, go to like whatever your college football stats page is that you use and look at like what the teams had punt return yardage wise, there's always like 25 to 30 teams that maybe, I think it's like have 200 yards or, you know, 175 plus yards of punt returns. And the rest of the country doesn't. Like, I mean, the majority of teams don't even get to that. It's more like around 100 yards or something like that. So I think sometimes we do this around here where things seem really fresh to us. Like Pearson L is just like yesterday, we saw him returning a punt against Fresno State or something. And you're kind of in your mind, like, why can't they do that again? Well, that was like a record-breaking season. So I guess I'd start there and then just say somewhere in the middle would be nice. Like somewhere of like not the Panico era, and that wasn't Santino's fault, by the way, but he was just a fair catch guy. But we've seen other guys like him where their job is just catch the ball, secure it, go back. A little more than that, please, but also not expecting it to be Pearsonell, you know, like if you could get 200 yards or something. And then I think you would feel this way too about the kick returns, Bruns. I'm more and more becoming in that camp where it's like, wave your hand, take the ball to 25. Like once in a while you want to break it. And I understand that, but the allure of it, it's a siren. It's a siren out there that's calling you, and it's not good. It's not what you want. Cause a lot of times what we see around here is a guy gets snowed under at the 17 yard line. I just said this on a radio show. I think that 8 to 10 yards is one of the biggest in football. Like it when, cause if you start at like the 16 yard line,
yep,
and you get a first down to like the 29, you're like still kind of starting the drive. If you're on the 25 and you get that first down to get it going, you're maybe at the like 40 yard line. You're like, all right, we're yep. You know, you kind of, you're on that spot on the field where it's like points, you're thinking points now. And that 10 yards is huge. And also, we're not even counting when you get a penalty on a kick return, which happens half the time, put you on the 5 yard line. And those are killers in the Big Ten. I mean, that's the difference between winning and losing. You start a drive there, punt, give them points, you lose. So I think you got to be really strategic about this and think about it with the kick return game.
I think we just found the second segment of your clock management podcast. It's kickoff return decision making. That's your segue. We've talked enough about time management. Now we're going to get into kickoff decision making, and that to me has been the biggest sin the last few years, is just knowing when to not bring it out. Like I always just go back to what I guess what now Denver Post writer Parker Gabriel always used to say: you know, they give it to you on the 25. Like that's all you got to do is catch it. So, That'll be a fascinating juxtaposition to see how Nebraska actually does that. Ed Foley also, you know, kind of said that it's not, you're not trying to do it like two or three times a game, but if there's like three plays that you can bust in the course of a season, like those are difference makers. And think about the last few years, maybe not last year, but the years before that, where you can point to like three or four special teams plays that Nebraska gave up that were just like the difference between a bowl game and sitting at home in December. So I think that's where he's correct, is that, you know, if you can block a punt or two, or, you know, you can bust a long return, you know, in a big game. I mean, that's huge. So it's a balancing act, but Nebraska's been on the wrong side of that coin way too long.
Oh, it's a heck of a balancing act, because think about your kick return guys who are back there usually. And this is what would make you a great kick returner, is you have the mindset like, I'm going to the house. You know, like that's the kind of guy you want back there. So he's getting the ball at like the 1 yard line or whatever, and he's not thinking like, okay, it's on the 25. He's thinking, I am going to make them play the fight song here in 10 seconds. And, so you got that dynamic of that type of guy who's back there. So it does take a special player, not just in skill, but like in like game understanding. Yeah. Like to just like in that moment, be like, nope, not now. Your better angel on their shoulders. Like, no. You're going to get hit at the 17. You've done this before. You know what's going to happen, or someone's going to block in the back. I mean, that's where the most penalties in football seem to happen, is like on kick and punt returns. And so it feels like even when someone has a good return, and I'm not just talking about Nebraska, watch any game, you're kind of like looking around like, okay, is there a flag waiting for it to come back? So I do like the idea, though. Nowadays, it feels like people are finding their aggression in block punts. Like it does seem to me, I don't have the data on this, but it feels like we're seeing that more and more, like in the college and pro game, where people are drawing stuff up and they're getting home to Nebraska. Did it a few times last year. That was an area of improvement where you would hope they could build on. they got to clean up their blocking a little because they gave up a couple too. So that'll be a big key on the block punt part. Can you make that like a plus 3 or 4 block punt situation this year as opposed to like a break even, which I think it might have been by the end when you waived the pros and cons. They might have had a couple more. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I mean, and that was just a change of aggression, basically. I mean, that was just Bill Bush saying, we're going to go and we're going to try and block a punt. And I agree. I mean, I think there seems to be enough out there that you can kind of assess trends and you know, how teams block things that you can kind of take advantage of that. So we'll see if Nebraska can do that. The other last thing with Ed Foley, he talked about Tristan Alvano, the 23 West Side kicker signee, who made some huge kicks in the state title game in 23 or in this past fall. Seems like that might be an open competition with Timmy Bleakrode once Alvano gets on campus in the summer.
Yeah, it does. It should be. I mean, it's not a position where it's not like D-line where, you know, you got to have certain measurables right away to be able to play in this league. You know, can you just kick it through the uprights? And the thing Ed Foley said with kicking is it's quantifiable. It's like, here it is, here's the numbers. He said one thing Matt Rhule does is he goes, it sounded like basically goes live with field goals where they're actually running into each other on the lines and giving the kicker that look, which I think is probably a big deal. You know, as opposed to sometimes at practices, the guys in the line don't really collide. They sort of stand there and the guy kicks it, everybody looks up, and it's not like the real game-like deal. So I kind of like that if that's something they do. But yeah, I suspect it should be an open competition because Alvano showed like he was one of the top two recruits or one or two in the country at his position. And I don't think this staff would have just offered a kicker, especially with Bleakrode already in the system, if they didn't think he was incredibly special. Which he has been, and he showed it to everybody. I don't know if I can recall a player as much as him where after a state title game within the state's borders, people were just like, gotta get that guy. You know, like it was amazing, like the reaction to his performance in that championship game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you make a walk-off field goal the way that he did with that kind of pressure, you know, the other field goals that he made, couple that with Nebraska's, I mean, let's be honest, hot and cold kicking situation during the Frost era. I think that kind of made a lot of sense. I mean, it was an offer that Matt Rhule's staff didn't have to honor. But I mean, this is a guy that's, you know, got offers from Boston College, Iowa, had their preferred walk-on offer. Like you kind of, he became a must get, and it's not often you say that about a kicker or a punter.
Think if he's in an Iowa uniform making a 48 yarder on you at the end of a game, that would just
waving at the sideline.
Yeah. That would crush you.
So we're going to have, we're recording this on Tuesday.
Hiring for your small business. If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Tomorrow is the second national signing day, the spring signing period, whatever you want to call it, national signing day. There's going to be some guys who are going to join Tristan Alvano in this class who are already committed. There's one decision with Nebraska implications coming tomorrow. So right now the guys who are committed who plan to sign tomorrow: Demetrius Bell, Ismael Smith-Flores, Sua Lafotu, and Jeremiah Charles. We have a decision coming from Regis Jesuit defensive back DeAndre Barnes. He visited this past weekend. What do you kind of make of what Nebraska's done in this January period, where they've kind of done a lot of work getting ready for 24, but they've also, you know, kind of filled in here and there with good athletes and guys that can help them in certain spots?
Well, if you look at the guys they have added through commits, Marcus Satterfield, when he was before the media a few weeks ago, he was asked, like, what's the position group of need right now? And he mentioned wide receiver. And I know people think they've got, like, they do have a lot of numbers there now, but clearly they want to really beef up that competition and get some different variety at that position. And I feel like that's what they've done. You know, with Bell, Smith, Flores, and Charles, you've all got I don't know, Bell's maybe not as raw. Smith, Flores, and Charles are raw football players. They're in that sort of Bryce Turner camp. So it'll be interesting I think we've said this before, or I've said it on here, but if like one of those guys who's a speed demon on the outside can show up and just be like kind of a niche, you know, that guy who gets like six catches during the season, but a couple of them are like sidebars on a Saturday where he has a 58 yard touchdown or something. You'd wonder if there's a guy like that in this pack that's signing tomorrow, if someone could emerge, even though they're going to be later arrivals. That could be a tough task, but that's what you wonder. And then Sua Lafotu, I'll swing that to you, Bruns, but multiple guys in California for the first time since, what, 2018, Tony White's got some say in that state with recruiting. I think that is at least a sign of what could happen out west in future recruiting classes, where you get a couple guys there.
Yeah, no, I think it's I was surprised that it, when you kind of dig in, that it had been since 2018, since you had two guys from out there, or multiple guys in the class. But I mean, Nebraska had kind of abandoned out there, if we're being honest, just with, you know, you saw some offers here or there, but, you know, Tony Tuioti really wasn't able to make a ton of dent there. And, you know, I think with this staff focusing so much on the 500 mile radius, you got a lot of focus on Texas, and that's not going to change. But I think Tony White can leverage contacts and find guys like Sua Lafotu, who kind of a late bloomer, late riser. He had some injury issues early in his high school career. He comes from a really good program. And if you pull, you know, two or three guys out of that state every year, I think that's a good recipe. You know, actually the Big Ten has not recruited particularly well for the kind of top guys in California in recent years. I'm curious to see how that changes when UCLA and USC join the conference. But, you know, from talking to high school guys or high school coaches that we talked to a lot during the whole Calabrasca thing, they have a lot of respect for Tony White and what he can do out there. So I think that was a good example maybe of what Nebraska, you know, might try to do going forward, especially once Tony White has some more chances to get out there and really evaluate, because he was kind of up against the clock a little bit here.
It's interesting the different perspectives you'll hear from coaches in the college game on recruiting California. You know, it is a place where I think you want to have somebody who can get you in here and there. I think you got to be careful to not spin your wheels out there too much. Now, I don't think they will with Tony White, because he's gonna know exactly where he wants to go and have his, like you say, his certain links that you kind of lean on, which can help you from doing that. But I remember the previous staff, it was Mickey who said it. He said, like, even at LSU, they had difficulty with California guys sometimes, because they, like, it's not California. They're right. Sort of like, they're just like a. And I'm not saying that as a knock. It's just like when it's completely different wherever they're going than where they've been. And some guys have had difficulty adjusting to it. So you get hot and cold takes on what it's like to recruit there. But I do like getting a couple, you know, like a class if you feel like you've got the right evals on people.
Yeah, definitely. To kind of go down the line a little bit more on guys, DeAndre Barnes visited this past weekend, more of a defensive back, I think, based on, you know, kind of what he's done production wise and how he profiles, but kind of similar to some of the other late additions, kind of a toolsier guy. He's the 200 meter state champion in Colorado last year. You know, really good track speed. So he kind of, you know, fits along the lines of a lot of guys that Nebraska has signed and will sign in this class. We'll kind of see what his decision is tomorrow. But, you know, I think when you kind of combine those guys, the four that they have in the boat right now, with what they did transfer portal wise, because I think that's kind of been the bulk of the work during this January period is kind of raiding Georgia's transfer portal cupboard, I guess. But you know, they've got a mix of guys that might help you a little bit down the road. They've got the portal guys that can help you right away and fill in some gaps. And I mean, that was the stated goal for the staff. They didn't host a big junior day during January. They wanted to get 2023 figured out, get the portal stuff figured out, and, you know, to spin it forward, once we get into March, I think that's when you're going to see a lot more of the 24, 25 type guys on campus and looking around closely at Nebraska during spring practices.
Yeah. I mean, they've built up a healthy roster to now put the football out there and let's see what you got. There's going to be movement after the spring again, and you can try to fill a need or two in the portal again. They covered a lot of ground, I would say, in 2 months. It's amazing. What are they going to – if Barnes commits or signs, let's see, they have 23 who have signed out of high school in JUCO, 4 who are committed. Barnes would be 5 and 11 portal guys. So he would be, what, number 39 as far as roster additions? That's pretty incredible.
Yep, that's nearly half your roster. And a lot of guys, I think it's safe to say that a lot of guys in the spring are going to be looking around, you know, at who they're competing with, because you're going to have to cut some guys, or guys are going to have to move on. It'll happen. The numbers will work themselves out, but it's going to be a lot of guys going out the door right away, or at least not right away, but during that second portal period.
Yeah, and I do think people around here have adjusted to the new way of college football. You know, there used to be such a sky is falling when there was, like, any transfer stuff. And now if it's like an Ernest Hausman, yeah, that's a big deal. But now people kind of take it for what it is. I was also thinking, like, DeAndre Barnes and, like, his track numbers, they're going to have to make a – you know, there's, like, that gif of Popovich, like, running through the hall, like, to get a European player. Yeah. Have to be one with like rule, like running like for somebody who has like track measurables in the 100 and 200 that line up high in his state.
There was the Belichick binoculars one too. That needs to be going too. Yeah. So they covered a lot of ground in the last month. We covered some ground today on the podcast. We'll have another one later this week. Maybe an appearance from the wheel. We'll see how that goes. If I can drag it out of the basement. But for Brian Christofferson, I'm Michael Bruns. This is the Husker 24/7 podcast. Get to the site for a couple days only. We've got a 60% off an annual subscription deal going. So hop on that. We'll have full signing day coverage on Wednesday. Matt Rhule talks at 2 p.m. I'm sure that next week after that, we'll have more Noah's Ark assistant interviews. And yeah. Get to Husker 24/7 for all your Husker coverage.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.